The Book Nook on WISO was presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Good morning. Welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WISO. Tom Robbins died last Sunday at the age of 92, and he made one appearance on the program 25 years ago. And this is from his obituary in the New York Times. His storylines were secondary and hard to explain. One reads a Tom Robbins novel for the verve of a well-wrought sentence, not a taut narrative. His literary currency was exaggeration, irony, bathos, and the comic mythopoetic, combined for an effect that was truly his own. Take a representative line like this from Even Cowgirls Get the Blues, his second novel. Quote, "An afternoon squeezed out of Mickey's mousy snout, an afternoon carved from mashed potatoes and lye, an afternoon scraped out of the dog's dish of meteorology." Weird, nostalgic, vaguely unsettling, whatever one calls it, fans could not get enough. His first book, Another Roadside Attraction, in 1971, received critical praise. Rolling Stone called it the quintessential novel of the 1960s. And after an initial flop in hardback, the novel took off in paperback. By the time Even Cowgirls Get the Blues appeared 5 years later, Another Roadside Attraction had sold more than 100,000 copies. Mr. Robbins kept his growing army of fans at arm's length. Extremely private, he rarely sat for interviews or stood for photographs, and he only occasionally left his home in the tugboat town of Lochconner, north of Seattle. He wrote slowly, pen, longhand, notepads, and agonized over each sentence, sometimes spending an hour on a single line. He rarely set his story out ahead of time, preferring to let his instincts and imagination carry him forward over a roadbed of well-turned words. He was quoted in a High Times magazine interview 25 years ago as saying, "I'm descended from a long line of preachers and policemen. Now, it's common knowledge that cops are congenital liars, and evangelists spend their lives telling fantastic tales in such a way as to convince otherwise rational people that they're factual. So I guess I come by my narrative inclinations naturally." And 25 years ago, I was waiting for Tom Robbins. I was waiting for him to show up for our live interview. I was nervous. I was very well prepared. I'd studied his book closely. And when he didn't show up at 2 o'clock, I started to get a little bit worried. He was a half hour late, which made it a very short interview by the time he arrived and informed me that he'd been down at the Trail Tavern drinking beer with a guy he identified as his lawyer from Toledo and his publicist, a very nervous young woman who was obviously a little upset that she couldn't get these guys to leave the bar and go to the radio station for the interview that they were supposed to do a half hour ago. But we persisted. I was not angry. I was actually very relieved because I had put a lot of effort into getting ready to talk to him. And so let's listen now to my only interview ever with Tom Robbins, who died a week ago at the age of 92. It's the Best of the Book Nook.
And you know what they say, good things sometimes take just a few minutes longer. And in this case, our good thing is an interview with Tom Robbins, who has a new book out. It's called Fierce Invalids Home from Hot Climates. Welcome to the Book Nook. And Tom, welcome back to the area. I understand you spent the night just down the road a few years ago.
My only night in Ohio I spent in the guardhouse at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Now, how did that happen?
Well, it wasn't quite as felonous as it might sound. I had hitched a ride on a military transport to Andrews Air Force Base to because I had a three-day pass, three-day leave, to see a young woman who lived in that area, and I just lost track of time. So on my way back, I hitched another ride, and we landed at Wright-Patterson, and I got bumped by someone of higher rank, and they looked at my leave papers and realized that I was what they call in the military AWOL. So they lodged me for the night, and then the next day got me on another flight to Omaha.
So you have such fond memories of Ohio, you had to come back.
Well, I just hope that history doesn't repeat itself. But after my reading tonight, you never know.
Well, welcome to Yellow Springs, which we think of, some of us, as the Ohi of Ohio.
And where does what's the origin of the name?
There's a Yellow Spring. Well, actually, it's a spring with sort of a yellowish, ironish colored water coming out of it just on the edge of town. So I guess that's where they got it.
Well, I'm thrilled to be momentarily a Buckeye.
Tom Robbins has joined us. His new book is Fierce Invalids Home from Hot Climates. And I understand that you wanted to come to Ohio because you get a lot of letters from people from Ohio.
Well, that's really the only way that I can gauge, if I ever bother to gauge, the demographics of my readership. But I just happened to notice that over the past 3 years or so, I've gotten more fan letters from Ohio than any other state in the union except California. So I thought I'd just better come here and see what's gone wrong in the heartland of America. Have are these people losing their minds or what?
The new book, Fierce Invalids Home from Hot Climates. Now, that quote, is that from Rambo?
Yes, it is. The full line, at least in my translation, is women love these fierce invalids home from hot climates.
Well, I love the book, and I just had to laugh over and over and over again as I was reading it because I felt that Rabelaisian invigoration. I felt that subtlety that is injected into every single word. It takes you a long time to write a book, doesn't it?
Usually about 3.5 years. I probably spend as much time on one sentence as John Grisham spends on a book and a half.
Which is sane.
No, I'm very slow because I care about the language. I mean, it really means something to me, and it's really why I do it.
Now, Tom, how do you live a romantic life and still live a fully conscious life? How do you do that?
That's something I'm still trying to work out in my own life, and that was one of the reasons. One of the themes that emerged early on in this book, I think, in a way, I was trying to work that out in my own life, because they are such opposite enterprises in a way. A romantic, almost by definition, is someone who is always looking toward an elsewhere, and yearning and longing for an elsewhere, yearning for another time, another place, whereas the spiritual person, the fully conscious person, knows that the important thing is to live in the moment, to be here now. So they seem to be diametric opposites. And yet I've run across Zen monks and Taoist teachers, tantric Hindu teachers, and particularly those who follow the Tibetan concept of crazy wisdom, who seem to have combined those two things, not quite in the way that a CIA agent would, as occurs in this book, but still they manage to achieve a level of serenity and deep consciousness, full consciousness, deep wisdom, but not give up any exhilaration or exuberance. They still have a great love for life. And it doesn't happen a lot, particularly in our culture.
Where are the clowns? This is like a mantra throughout the book, and I'm guessing
send in the clowns.
It seems like they're being continuously sent in throughout the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the clown, we learn a lot more from clowns, and I think clowns are a lot more valuable in human society, particularly as far as stimulating growth and relieving us of our burdens of fear and guilt. Clowns are much more important than heroes.
And I think if we lose our sense of humor, we've lost almost everything, haven't we?
You surely have, yeah. Humor is both a form of wisdom and a means of survival.
I got a really strong message from the book that our society, as it pummels those little baby consumers, those little future consumers with advertising, really has lost its soul in a way. You seem to be lashing out at consumerism, at conformity, and every time you do that, I would go right on. But it's like being in a web. We can't get out of it.
It's pretty difficult, but you can. Believe me, you can. We live in a society that, first of all, demands that we take it very seriously, when most of the time it's so silly you can hardly keep from falling off your chair if you contemplate it very lucidly for 2 seconds. But it's all, I think there is a purpose to life, and I think that purpose is to enlarge our souls, light up our brains, and liberate our spirits. This is pretty much at odds with the plans that our leaders have for us. But as long as you're a good little consumer and a good little churchgoer and a good little soldier and a good little worker bee, you will always be controlled and manipulated. And as long as you allow yourself to be controlled and manipulated, you will never enlarge your soul, light up your brain, and liberate your spirit.
Do you miss Pee Wee Herman?
I do miss Pee Wee Herman. Pee Wee was kind of a god to me. And this character, the main character in this book, the defrocked CIA agent, I see him now that the book is over and I can look at him from a more of an objective plateau. I see him as a cross between James Bond, Lao Tzu, and Pee Wee Herman.
There's a bit of defrocking that goes on. I don't know that much about your background. Are you coming out of the Catholic belief?
No, I'm not. I'm okay. Out of the Southern Baptist.
Okay. Well, you were having so much fun with these nuns in the book. This is such a... I don't want to give anything away about the book, but the nuns are just beautiful people. They really are.
Thank you. I became quite fond of them myself, particularly Domino Theory.
Oh, yeah. This is the kind of book where I literally, I think I could read this book 10 times and continue to discover new things every time. You have so much stuff in there. When you're trying to come up with a metaphor or a simile, and your book is just littered with them, do you sometimes say, now, I've got to come up with a metaphor for something really dry? And do you ponder that for a while? What's the process like?
Well, yeah, I do ponder them for a long time. I don't have a notebook full of metaphors and similes that I jot down when they occur to me spontaneously, because they almost never do. But the reason I strive for the metaphor or the simile in certain scenes, in certain sentences, is to deepen the reader's subliminal understanding of the person, place, or thing that is being described. I think that it actually heats up the scene, makes it, it heightens it. It makes it, I think ultimately, no matter how outrageous the metaphor might be, if it's accurate, then it makes that scene more real to the reader. At least it does for me. And often there's a little exaggeration there, but that very act of exaggeration can jack up the scene to the level where the reader experiences it more like it might have been in real life.
Well, Sweaters is That's how you pronounce it, Schwitters?
Schwitters, yes.
Schwitters. He's such an intense thinker, and his obsession with Finnegan's Wake by Joyce, I think, really says a lot about him.
Well, he loves language. He loves beauty. He loves innocence, particularly the non-fluffy, non-sanctimonious kind of purity. And he loves freedom, and he loves language.
I'm the kind of person that believes that humor and language ultimately can save us. I'm still hopeful of that, but it's hard to be optimistic sometimes. The books that are coming out these days just seem like they're being created almost on an assembly line. There are very few books that I read where I can savor every word like this one. I can only name a few writers these days like that. Are there any writers that you enjoy reading who are currently producing stuff?
Well, yes. Most American fiction today seems to vacillate between the brutal and the bland. And a lot of it falls in the category of what I call crybaby fiction or crybaby prose, a self-indulgent wallowing in one's misery. But there are writers who transcend that. Unfortunately, the best writers, the writers you would think could most successfully transcend that because they have the stylistic skills to do so, and in some cases even the background, are avoiding it. I'll mention names, Jim Harrison and Peter Matheson. Both of those guys have a really good understanding of Zen Buddhism. They both practice Zen. They both sit. But they don't put it into their work. I mean, Matheson does it in his nonfiction, and Harrison does it in his poems, but you don't find it in their novels. And, yeah, I find it rather dismaying that they don't. But I think I understand why, and that's because the critical establishment is so hostile to it.
I did a little mini unscientific poll when we booked you onto this program, and I got all these people calling me. All of a sudden, they were going crazy. Tom Robbins, you're really going to have Tom Robbins on your program? It was almost like the Holy Grail had been announced. It was insane. I've never had such a response from listeners. And so I did a little poll, and I asked each one of them, I said, well, what's your favorite book by Tom Robbins? And I'd say 90% of them said Jitterbug Perfume, and a lot of people, that essay about the beat just absolutely transcended anything they'd ever read. I was astounded by that. Do you have a favorite book that you've written?
Well, right now I have to say that I'm enamored with the current one. But, you know, I don't read them after I finish writing them. I mean, I'll get one back. You know, the first one off, well, allegedly the first one off the press is probably actually number 203 or something. But I get this brand pristine new book that I've never seen before. And, of course, I sit down and read it. But after that, I don't read them. I'm saving them for my golden years, provided my golden years aren't here already. I did a book tour of Italy where, for some reason, I'm very popular about 3 years ago. And unbeknownst to me, the book that had just come out in Italy and the one everyone was talking about, and I did 39 interviews in 6 days, was Another Roadside Attraction, which was published in 1971. So I had not read it in over 25 years. It was kind of hard answering some of the questions.
Italy is such an amazing place. There are so many countries out there that you turned into American suburbs. I right now have just recently decided I've got to go to Lithuania before it turns into West Des Moines. Mm-hmm. And it's like if you don't grab the moment today, it's going to go away. Do you have a favorite country where you like to go?
Well, excuse me, my favorite destination is Africa. I've been to Africa 5 times. And out there on the savannah, 100 miles from any civilization, under this sky full of more stars than you could ever imagine existed, where primitive equalities prevail, the lions are coughing outside of your tent at night, and the hyenas are coming into camp with the most blood-curdling sounds you've ever heard. I feel like, you know, this is the way the world was meant to be, and everything else is a mistake. But I like Bangkok, too. I love Bangkok because it took the American energy and just pushed it on into a whole nother level. I mean, this is like capitalism that was pushed so far it turned into anarchy. It's quite amusing.
How do we get away from prideful narcissism?
Well, the first step, in fact, the first step toward becoming a whole and happy human being is to start reducing the ego and quit taking ourselves. I mean, that was your question, wasn't it? How do we reduce the ego? Well, you reduce the ego. I'm having a bad brain day. You know, I think my cognitive coif needs a cut and color here. I think that it all begins, the bottom line is we have to stop taking ourselves so seriously. That's where we get in trouble. And that, I think, is the root cause of most unhappiness and most depression in the world today.
Someone I know very well a few years ago was down in Belize on a swim with the dolphins thing. And she ran into a woman named Donna Robbins. And they were in this group together. And apparently there was another woman in the group who kept running around saying, "Oh, you've got to read this book by Tom Robbins. You've got to read this book by Tom Robbins." And finally, Donna Robbins said, "It's a wonderful book. He's a wonderful man. I was married to him." And apparently this other woman stopped promoting your book.
Well, there are women like that all over the world.
Thank heaven.
Thank God.
The book is Fierce Invalids, Home from Hot Climates by Tom Robbins. And Tom, what do you do for fun? I know you must have some stuff that you really enjoy doing. Is it really private, or are there some things that you share with us?
Well, I love reading. I think reading is one of the supreme pleasures on earth, and that's why in my work I try to create a reading experience. In other words, an experience that can't be duplicated on the big screen or the small screen. I'm not just telling a story, and there's nothing wrong with telling stories. I love a story, a good story, as well as the next person. But reading is, I taught myself to read when I was five, and it's always been one of the supreme pleasures in my life. But I love nature. I spend a lot of, I happen to live in Washington State, and we have access to wilderness. I love food. I love drink. I love women. I love language, of course, trees and rivers and rocks, and just generally following the charmer's pipes down oblique paths of mysticism and eroticism. I played competition-level volleyball for over 20 years, too, and I dabble in yoga and things like that.
Well, I love the book, Tom, and we really appreciate you coming clear out here to Yellow Springs to talk to us.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
You've been listening to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO as we remember Tom Robbins, who died last Sunday at the age of 92. That was my only interview with him, recorded 25 years ago when he came through town. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, community-owned public radio for curious listeners. And I loved his anecdote about the one and only other time he had ever been in Dayton. He was in the military, and he had been on leave, and he was flying back to his station, wherever it was, and he landed at Wright-Patterson, and they looked at his papers and realized that he was technically absent without leave, and they locked him up for the night. And that was his only other memory of being in Dayton, Ohio. So a little different visit for him. And he was quite a writer, an amazing guy, a wordsmith. And this is from his New York Times obituary, which just came out this week. His original fan base drew from the 20-somethings of the hippie era and its aftermath. As he kept writing, that base stayed the same age. As was the case for Kurt Vonnegut or Hermann Hesse, one of Mr. Robbins' idols. His careening sensibility and hyper-imaginative style burrowed deep into the minds of youthful readers, but their appeal, alongside that of jam bands and psychoactive drugs, often curdled as fans moved towards middle age. Though his books continued to debut on the New York Times bestseller list, critics increasingly demeaned him as a relic of the 1960s, a dig to which he took great offense. He expressed even more frustration with critics who insisted that he choose between humor and gravity, as if the two were mutually exclusive. And indeed, in his work, especially his early books, was not merely nostalgic fluff. Their ridiculous sentences and shaggy dog plots obscured serious literary ingenuity, while he was decades ahead of the pack in taking on themes about ecology, feminism, and religion. "What bothers most critics of my work is the goofiness," he told the New York Times in 1993. One reviewer said, "I need to make up my mind if I want to be funny or serious. My response is that I will make up my mind when God does, because life is a commingling of the sacred and the profane, good and evil. To try to separate them is fallacy." Thomas Eugene Robbins was born on July 22, 1932, in Blowing Rock, North Carolina, a small town northeast of Asheville, and later moved with his family to the suburbs outside Richmond, Virginia. His father, George, worked for an electrical company, and his mother, Catherine Robinson Robbins, was a nurse. Both his grandfathers were Southern Baptist preachers. It was, he later said, the perfect beginning to a long literary career because he traced his earliest imaginative scribblings at age 5. As a teenager, he told his parents he wanted to be a novelist. His father, hoping to push his son toward a more practical career, persuaded him to enroll at Washington and Lee University, a Virginia school known for its journalism program. As a sports reporter for the campus newspaper, he was edited by Tom Wolfe. In 1963, he ingested 300 micrograms of pharmaceutical-grade lysergic acid, his first LSD trip. It was, he said, life-changing and life-affirming. He quit his job to write freelance for underground newspapers. He developed a local reputation as an offbeat writer, but it wasn't until 1967, when he reviewed a concert by the Doors, that he found his style, inspired by the liberating otherworldliness of Jim Morrison and his band. He moved to Washington and began to write the novel which became Another Roadside Attraction. And the rest is history. He was a best-selling author for many years, and he came out to see us on a hot summer day 25 years ago in Yellow Springs. He refreshed himself at the Trail Tavern with some icy cold beer, and then, feeling fortified, he came over to WYSO to have a conversation with me. Rest in peace, Tom Robbins.